According to John, the 13th chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. Now before the festival of the Passover, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The devil had already put it into the heart of Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray him. And during supper, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, got up from the table, took off his outer robe, and tied a towel around himself. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet and wipe them with a towel that was tied around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus answered, "You do not know what I am doing now, but later you will understand." Peter said to him, "You will never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "One who is bathed does not need to wash, except for the feet, but is entirely clean. And you are clean, though not all of you." For he knew who was to betray him. For this reason he said, "Not all of you are clean." After he had washed their feet, he had put on his robe and had returned to the table, he said to them, "Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for that is what I am. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have set you an example, that you should do as I have done to you. Very truly I tell you, servants are not greater than their master, nor are messengers greater than the one who sent them. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them." Now from verse 17 over to verse 31. When Judas had gone out, Jesus said, "Now the Son of Man has been glorified, and God has been glorified in him. If God has been glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself, and will glorify him at once. Little children, I am with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and as I said to the Jews, now I say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. You may be seated. I love my family to death, and you likely love your family or most of them to death. You may have friends that you love to death. You may love your country to death. You may love even more trivial things to death, like the Oregon and Oregon State women's basketball teams, following them to the ups and to the downs, with them, with our loved ones to the end. I love you to death. As a parent, I've learned that love is always substitutionary. It's either them or me. Either you break yourself open so that your children can be whole, or you keep your life intact and your children grow up broken. Andrew Root writes of the consummate bachelor who can't say "I love you" to anyone, not because he's allergic to love, but because he's allergic to death. Because when you love someone, you enter death. To love, you bind yourself so completely to another that parts of you are put to death. Of course, we have those other circumstances where we don't say "I love you" to death. We say, "Those people are killing me," or "You're going to be the death of me one of these days." Now we're on this final and fateful night where Jesus, for the last time, is gathered with his friends as a complete group of 13. But there's a tension in the air. They've traveled with him, and he had a week or so before entered the city of Jerusalem to shouts of Hosanna. But he had also turned tables over in the temple and stirred up even further his adversaries. And on this Passover night, a holiday festival night, there was tension in the air. And everyone could sense it, but none more than Judas. Now, Judas's story is quite something. And tonight I want to look at two perspectives on Judas's story. One of them this Sunday night will be featured on NBC as they roll out yet another live musical. So John Legend is starring in Jesus Christ Superstar on Sunday evening. Now, when I was a kid, I discovered the music of Jesus Christ Superstar, and I loved it. And it was only after listening to it several times that I realized this is not like the Bible tells the story. This is pretty controversial, especially Judas's final song. Some of the words from Judas's last song. Christ, I know you can't hear me, but I only did what you wanted me to. Christ, I'd sell out the nation, for I have been saddled with the murder of you. I have been spattered with innocent blood. I shall be dragged through the slime and the mud. I have been spattered with innocent blood. I shall be dragged through the slime and the slime and the slime and the mud. And then he quiets down and sings, I don't know how to love him. I don't know why he moves me. He's a man. He's just a man. He's not a king. He's just the same as anyone I know. He scares me so. When he's cold and dead, will he let me be? Does he love me too? Does he care for me? And then Judas runs to the outer regions of the land, and he begins to lose himself. He sings, my mind is in darkness now. My God, I am sick. I've been used, and you knew all the time. God, I'll never, ever know why you chose me for your crime, your foul, bloody crime. You have murdered me. You have murdered me. And then as Judas takes his own life, a choir sings, poor Judas, so long, Judas. Jesus Christ Superstar. Here's one perspective. Here's another perspective on the story of Judas. This comes from Bo Geertz, or Geertz. He was a Swedish Lutheran pastor, and more of his work is being translated into English, and it's just fantastic stuff. He wrote a gospel told in the first person. It's called With My Own Eyes. So he tells the whole gospel, this is now the end of the Last Supper scene. They've just finished receiving the meal from Jesus, the bread and the wine. So a few pages from this narration. When Peter placed the cup back on the table, he saw that the master still had something to say. He had been very serious all evening, but also calm and firm, as if he had finally done what must inevitably be done. But a half-hidden joy had bled through the seriousness. It was something that was at one with the Paschal evening's victorious joy. But just now he looked to be in pain. There was this hint of pain in the seriousness that Peter did not recognize. The master put his hand on the table and lifted it slightly, and then he let it fall heavily enough that they all looked up. Behold, he said, he who betrays me, his hand is with me here at the table. They looked at him in despair. Yes, Jesus said, it is so. One of you shall betray me. The Son of Man goes just as it has been determined for him, but woe to the man through whom he is betrayed. They bent down. They looked at him furtively and even more furtively at each other. Then one of them asked with a voice fearful of the answer, Lord, is it I? The others looked up. It was the same question that burned in every one of them. It was inconceivable someone would be able to betray him. And yet it was so because he had said it. It was an evil mystery, so scary in its unfathomableness that they all crouched so as not to be hit by the blow. Their voices were indignant and yet as helpless as a child's. Peter nodded to he who was closest to the master and asked him who it was. He whispered to the master and received an answer that Peter could not comprehend. Then the master took one of the last pieces of bread, formed it into a scoop, and dipped it into the fat. But he did not bring it to his own mouth. He offered it to someone else as a host would do for a guest he wanted to honor. Peter followed his hand in wonder. He wanted to see who the master thought to distinguish with his gift. It was Judas Iscariot. Peter felt a little disappointed when the master offered his hand out to Judas and looked at him with a look filled with all his benevolence. Strangely enough, Judas seemed to hesitate. He did not look up. It was as if he did not want to receive this gift. So he lifted his eyes hastily, only looking at the master once with a glance of uncertainty. He took the bread, thanked him, and stuffed it in his mouth. Was he surprised at the honor? His face had been strangely tight. He tried too hard to be at ease. Did he not want to show the others how flattered he felt? Then Peter understood. It was as if a dead man's hand had been laid upon his neck and slapped his back. His loathing and his horror could not have been worse. He turned to see Judas's petrified face, his jaws ground as if he was chewing grass, while a single little uneasy wink pulled the expressionless eyes together. Then he looked at the master. His glance rested completely on Judas. The good, open, inviting expression was succeeded by a calm and firm authority that did not appeal, but commanded. "Do quickly what you do," he said. Judas turned around but did not lift his eyes. He swallowed, sat up, put shoes on his feet, and went out the door with strange, ungainly steps that seemed quiet but had an unnatural echo in the hall. The door seemed to open itself. Outside, the night was deep. Without looking, Judas stepped out and was instantaneously engulfed by the darkness. None of the others looked up. They were not bothered by what had happened. The master had given his command so firmly and naturally, it seemed to concern a long agreed upon matter. He could have told them to buy what they needed for the festival or to give some gift to the poor. One thing was clear. It was he who had told Judas to go. If Judas went out into the night on his own evil errand, then it was all part of the very same event that was now to be fulfilled. As Pastor Yurtz sees the story of Judas, he sees Jesus loving him to the end, as John's gospel told us. The Judas is at the table, and Judas's darkness is enveloped by the love that Jesus had for him. Jesus had given the holy meal while Judas was at the table. Jesus had washed the feet of Judas along with the rest. Judas was loved by Jesus to the end and offered a final gesture of honor at the table before dismissing him with a cover story. At this table, Jesus gives himself in a piece of bread and a cup of wine and places his very life into the hands of his friends, into the hands of sinners. To sinners as hell-bent as Judas, and to sinners who had yet to plumb the depths, like Peter. To each and to all, at his table, Christ serves indiscriminately, without distinction. And through his church, we are handed the meal which proclaims the one who loved us to death. Our psalm this evening was Psalm 116. We only read the first two verses and then skipped to 12. But in between, the psalmist praises God for delivering him from death, from illness, and bringing him back from the brink. And now in verse 12, he's asking, how can he possibly repay and thank the Lord enough? "What shall I return to the Lord for all his bounty to me? I will lift up the cup of salvation and call on the name of the Lord. I will pay my vows to the Lord in the presence of all his people. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his faithful ones. O Lord, I am your servant. I am your servant, the child of your serving girl. You have loosed my bonds. I will offer to you a thanksgiving sacrifice and call on the name of the Lord. I will pay my vows to the Lord in the presence of all his people." Interesting that after the psalmist had spent the beginning of the song praising God for delivering him from death, that he should insert into the middle of that thanksgiving, "Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his faithful ones." What are we to make of this? Well, we see this come to its fulfillment in Jesus, who himself raised the cup of salvation and gave thanks at that Last Supper with his friends, who told them that the story of Passover was now coming to its fulfillment in him and in the things that would take place. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of the faithful ones, because the faithful one of God, Jesus Christ, died for the love of the world. And he who faithfully loved you to his death now loves you to your own. And precious is the one who's been loved to death by Jesus. now even the tremendous tension of death in the air is made to fulfill God's promise that the Lord will not leave you nor forsake you, nor leave you unfed when you come to his table. How cherished is the freedom of faith which makes an end of the mastery of sin. How precious is the death which is no longer the fitting wages of sin, but the final preparation for the inheritance of everlasting love. In the words of George Herbert, the poet, "Love bade me welcome, yet my soul drew back, guilty of dust and sin. But quick-eyed love, observing me grow slack from my first entrance in, drew nearer to me, sweetly questioning if I lacked anything. A guest, I answered, worthy to be here. Love said, you shall be he. I, the unkind, ungrateful, ah, my dear, I cannot look on thee. Love took my hand and smiling did reply, who made the eyes but I? Truth, Lord, but I have marred them. Let my shame go where it doth deserve. And know you not, says love, who bore the blame? My dear, then I will serve. You must sit down, says love, and taste my meat. So I did sit and eat." And so shall we sit and kneel and eat of the precious gift of the one who has loved us to death. Amen.